You're listening to episode 337 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the Building Psych Strength podcast. My name is Dr. April, and I'm so thrilled that you're here. You know, there's a lot of ways that I find guests and topics for the podcast. Sometimes I hear from those of you in the audience, you ask me to cover a topic, and I am always happy to do that. P.S., you can email us at info@peakmindpsychology.com if you want us to cover a topic. Sometimes I go out on Amazon and I look for books that are being released soon in this genre by authors that I know you guys will want to hear from. There's some fun ones coming up, by the way. And sometimes I get approached by the teams who support people doing incredible work in spaces that are very adjacent to what we do. And I know that they would make such a great contribution to the podcast. And that's what happened in the case of this week's guest. This week, we are hearing from Alana Robinson. She is a parenting coach and the CEO of Uncommon Sense Parenting. She's also a registered early childhood educator. She's a mom of two, and she is a military wife. She basically helps people figure out how to be in relationship with their kids, be good parents, all through understanding the neuroscience of child development. It's such a cool area of expertise. So when her team reached out, I knew that we needed to have her on the podcast because there are a lot of parents in this audience. I myself was really curious to dig into how the way our brains develop ultimately influences the way that kids might behave. And even better than that, I was curious as to how I can be a better support person or better parent to my kids at those different stages, depending upon, you know, where they're at developmentally. So this conversation is all about that topic. We talk a lot about the different areas of the brain, and undoubtedly, we're simplifying things here, but it's really about as complicated as you need to get in order to make a really big impact in a space like parenting with children. We talk about different areas of the brain. We talk about when they become more developed for kids over the course of their lifetime. And we talk about how we should approach the kids differently depending upon sort of which brain they're in. We also talk about how to recognize that. So Alana does a really great job of giving us essentially the tools we need in order to be more compassionate with our kids when they're doing some of the behaviors that are the most challenging for us to be aware of and manage. She also talks about the very critical role that our own self-management plays in our parenting and how successful it will be. You're not going to want to miss this episode. If you are a parent or if you regularly interact with kids, this is the episode for you. And not only that, for those of you who are parents of older kids, we also talk about that. You know, lots of times we focus on toddlers or kindergarten age kids, babies, things like that. But I wanted something in here for parents of older kids, parents of teenagers, parents of tweens. How do we use this information to deepen our relationship and also to parent better? So there's a special spot in there for you if you are a parent of older kids. I'm so excited about this week's interview. It is such a deep topic and one that I know will make an incredible impact in your lives. All right, let's get to that interview. Alana, I'm so excited that you're here for this episode of the podcast because selfishly, as I heard about you and about what you teach in your area of expertise, I immediately knew that I wanted to have you on the podcast, if for no other reason, because I think I'm going to learn a lot from you. We're talking about a topic that I hit every single day and that I think is going to really resonate with this audience. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. So we're here today talking about parenting and the hard parts of parenting. And specifically, there are a number of hard things about parenting, but we're talking about kids' behavior and when their behavior is particularly challenging. And I'm excited to dive in there because, again, this is something that parents encounter, if not on a daily basis, pretty close.
Oh, yeah. Hourly.
Yeah. Yeah. So right out of the gate, I want to just start with the basics. Like when we think about a kid's behavior, when they are really having a hard time, like I'm thinking back to this morning, there is a specific time that school starts. We need to be in the car. We got to get going. And my kids are like, nah, we want to play more. We're going to throw a tantrum. We're angry. We're going to fight about this thing. Like the fury of the morning starts and I feel myself not knowing quite what to do. So is there something you want people to know just right out of the gate about kids' behavior in that situation that just can kind of set the stage for the conversation?
Yeah, kids do well if they can, to quote Dr. Ross Green. Kids do well if they can, not if they want to, if they can. And I think that's probably the most important little nugget to kind of keep at the back of your mind, because it's difficult when our children are being very behavioral and they're screaming and they're crying and they're throwing a fit, to remember that they are doing the best that they can in that moment. And I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years. I still have moments when, you know, my five-year-old's prostrated on the floor, screaming, kicking, and crying. And I'm like, oh, serenity now. We are having a rough morning, but he is doing the best that he can. He's doing the absolute best that he can. So what is making it so hard for him? What is he trying to tell me? And that, you know, kids do well if they can kind of mantra in my head makes me remember, okay, behavior is communication. So what is he trying to tell me? What is so hard? And that just helps you lead from a place of empathy, which makes everything much easier.
Yeah. Well, of course, because, you know, you get in that situation and we as adults with our adult minds that we bring to the table, we immediately sort of default to thinking that we're talking to another person who is of a similar mind. And when you put it so beautifully and succinctly like that, that they do well if they can, it reminds us that if they're not doing well, it's because they can't. It's not because my four-year-old is sitting there thinking like, you know, how can I really make her mad today? Or how can I really get on mom's nerves today? Or what button should I push today? That intent really isn't there. It's not some calculated, predetermined thing. It's that there's something going on truly in that moment that needs to be communicated. And it's such a succinct and really clear way of communicating that.
Yeah. Kids, like nobody wants to be the shit disturber. Nobody wants to be, you know, not meeting expectations. It feels gross. Nobody enjoys misbehaving. And I think that it's so counter to what society has said about children for so long that, you know, we have to beat them into submission. We have to teach them that what they did was wrong. They know when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. It's not about a lack of knowledge. It's about a lack of ability. And those two things are completely separate.
And if you think about this is why I was so excited to talk to you, because right before we hopped on to record, we were saying that some of the things we're going to get into in this episode make it so much easier for we as the parent to maintain compassion and empathy for what the kid is going through. Because, I mean, imagine yourself as an adult, right, in two different situations. One situation where you go in with bad intentions. Your goal is to stir the pot in that situation. The emotions that you might feel when the pot is stirred, you probably feel like you achieved your goal. Like, good for me, I did it. Versus times when you go in and you give it your best, but you don't meet expectations. You don't feel victorious. You don't feel like you've achieved your goal. You feel devastated, embarrassed, or upset to some degree. And if you can keep that in mind, it's so much easier to stay compassionate with your kids in a situation where really you just want to scream your face off at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's why I approach everything behavior wise from like, what's going on under the hood? What is going on in their little brain? And what does that tell us about the problem that needs to be solved?
Yeah.
Because once you understand their stage of development and what brain state they're in and the different triggers that were and stressors that were present in the time leading up to that behavior, it makes it so much easier to actually come up with a solution.
Yeah, let's go there. I love that approach, the sort of brain science, neuroscience approach to thinking about what might be really fueling these situations. Can you give us kind of a overview of maybe developmentally what's going on with kids at different stages and what those capabilities are and aren't maybe?
Yeah. So like there's the typical like ages and stages stuff, like their play stages from like completely solo play all the way up to cooperative play. So children around 2-3 are in that kind of parallel phase. Around 3-4, they're moving into associative play. Once they're in like 5-6, they're actually like playing games together and they're cooperative play. So that is a big factor there, especially when we're talking about siblings who aren't getting along. Mismatch in play states can become a huge issue.
I feel like you just blew my mind right now, actually. Keep going, but like selfishly, I'm over here scribbling notes. Yeah.
So what I really love to dig into with development, though, is their development of their self-regulation. And I like to use the triune brain model with my clients because it just makes it really nice and clear. Where there's those three sections of our brain, right? We've got our neocortex, what Dr. Stuart Shanker calls the blue brain, that top level that has all of our like civilized people skills in it, our executive functions, our knowledge, our language, all of that stuff that makes us people, human beings that can have this conversation and learn. And then there's our limbic system, our red brain, which is only holds our memories, our emotions, and our security system. It has no reason. And so that is where a lot of these behaviors happen when we're in our limbic system, when we're red brain dominant. And then below that, we have like our lizard brain, our brown brain, as Dr. Stuart Shanker calls it, where it's like literally like a lizard. You know, if a crocodile sees something come across its field of vision, it's going to snap at it. It doesn't care if that's a stick. It doesn't care if it's its own tail. It's going to snap at it and it's going to find out. And so that's where that like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, all of those live. And so when we think about like developmentally, when we're born, that neocortex isn't wired up and working. Like it's there, the gray matter is there, but we've got to get our big heads out of a relatively small hole. And if it was working, it would get squished and it would get damaged. So Mother Nature in her infinite wisdom was like, well, we're going to put it there, but we're not actually going to turn it on until out we come. Which when you think of a baby, what do babies do? They communicate with emotions. They cry or they laugh. There's very little in between. They look to their higher order brains, their adults and their older siblings to see if they're safe or not. They reference the world around them and they reference their memories, the things that have happened to them in the past to determine if they're safe or not. And they just repeat what has happened over and over and over. They use those very limited memories to inform what to do next.
Yeah.
And then as we get older, as we get into that, you know, toddler stage, as that blue brain wires up, what Dr. Siegel calls the upstairs brain, we start to become more civilized human beings. And that kind of, you know, gets better and better until around age 3, when about, you know, most of the wiring is done, but it's still not fully connected. And that's when, you know, a lot of doctors will say, that's when they start acting like people. And their personality starts coming out and they start having their own thoughts and their own feelings and their own opinions on things.
Good or bad.
Yeah, good or bad.
Easy or difficult.
Hence the three-nager stage.
Oh God, my kids, both of them, huge three-nagers. Terrible twos, non-existent. Three-nager, yeah. Oh yeah. Had two of them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Three is fun. Then we get to 4 and they have this huge burst of limbic system development what I call the limbic leap, where their amygdala literally triples in volume within that year. And so they're hypersensitive and hyper aware of danger during that time. And that's why, like, everybody's like, oh, they're four, they should know what's going on by now. And then they start becoming hugely emotional and irrational. And everybody's like, what's going on? Well, their security system is on high alert. And especially for the last 2 years, where we've had these four-year-olds who are going through that particular stage of development during a time where there's this ever-present danger that everybody is hyper-vigilant for, they're having a rough go of it.
Oh, I'm like writing things down over here. This is a big deal. That was my youngest child. Yeah, she's 3.5 right now. So I reference her being four, but you know, she's 3.5 yeah. coming up on four right now.
Yeah,
right
at that stage. My youngest turned four in June of 2020. So we got it like a Mack truck.
Yeah.
It hit and it has stuck because he hasn't had that those typical exposures and those typical experiences that would typically teach them what danger is and what danger isn't. And therefore, you know, by the time they hit five, they start to chill out a little bit, but it seems to be sticking around a little bit longer for these kids because everybody is so hyper alert for this unseen danger. And there's nothing that they can like put a pin in and be like, this thing is the danger.
Right.
It's just everywhere, which
wow.
isn't great for the amygdala. So
yeah, this makes so much sense.
So when we think about like that kind of those stages of development in terms of the limbic system, and the other thing to know is that we need our limbic system. Our limbic system, as I said, it comes out ready to go, wired up and working. And that's what controls like our automatic body functions. It's what keeps us safe. The blue brain, that neocortex, all of that stuff is nice, but it's not keeping us alive. And so when we're low on energy, our brain monitors our glucose levels and a bunch of other factors. And when we get low on energy, our brain goes, if we get attacked right now, there is no hope in hell of us staying safe. So we're going to just unplug Mr. Upstairs and we're going to take all of our energy and we're going to put it to our limbic system so that if something attacks us, we have the energy to run away, fight, whatever it is we need to do to keep ourselves safe. Which means when your child is freaking out, they literally cannot think, they cannot reason, they cannot tell you what's going on. You know, phrase, use your words. Nothing grates on my nerves more than that term. People are seeing these like freaking out kids. They're like, use your words. They can't. They don't have access because that part of their brain is literally not getting blood or oxygen right now.
Can I give a crazy like example? I'm going to use two words that probably strike fear in the heart of most parents. And those words are witching hour. So yes. If you think about, you know, what you just said, that was what first jumped to my mind because you're talking about when you're kind of taxed, you're tired, you kind of have been through the ringer during the day. Witching hour for most kids happens in like the early evening, late afternoon sort of time when they're tired. And then that little bit of like blue brain that they have shuts off and they just go crazy, usually not in a good way, like crying and tantrums, and they just can't, like they're over done. Themselves
they're
at that
at
point.
At the end of their rope and they've got nothing left to give. And no matter how much you cajole or coerce them, they've got nothing else to give you.
I'm like, want to go back and give myself such a hug, especially a few years ago. Right. I just want to hug that woman and be like, it's going to be okay. You're doing good.
Yeah. Wow. And so when we think about that, like once you're able to identify, like, is my child in blue brain? Are they in red brain? Are they in brown brain? And having those like three kind of markers of what brain state are they in right now? It makes it so much easier to tailor how you respond to them and therefore how they behave, because you have some idea of what their brain, what information they can actually receive.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay. Let's go there. Maybe can you give me like, let's run through those three, like when they're in each of the different colors of brain. I mean, it's obviously much more complicated than that under
absolutely.
The surface.
It's a but very what, simple model.
Right. But what we need to know practically to do much better on a day-to-day basis, it really doesn't need to go to that depth. So,
exactly.
Can you maybe go through those three colors of the brain, what it looks like how we recognize when a kid is in that state, and then how we as a parent can support them? Because something else that we talked about before we record that I think is worth saying really explicitly here is that, and I think you and I share this viewpoint, is that I love talking about, okay, situations when your mind or your brain, we're going to interchangeably use them right now, even though it's not an exact one-to-one, when it just won't allow a certain behavior, or it just is going to force a certain set of emotions or thought experience on you. On one side of the coin, it can help you feel so much compassion. Like if you think about that kid who is in the middle of witching hour, or my 3.5-year-old right now, no wonder why she is so emotional. Like you just develop so much compassion because it's like, oh, you poor thing. Like that's so hard. On the flip side though, as her mom, then I'm like, well, what do I do? You know, like she's got this crazy brain right now. What do I do? So that compassion is also met with a little bit of feeling like you're not sure how to approach the situation. So maybe we run through the colors of the brain. How do we recognize them? And then what do we do?
Yeah. So as I said, that blue brain, that neocortex is, you know, while all our good human stuff lives, our language, our knowledge, our executive functioning skills, our ability to reason, it's all up there. And so when your child is in blue brain, you can usually tell because they're alert and engaged. They're able to have a conversation with you. They're happily playing with their toys. They're being imaginative. When you ask them to do something, they're like, okay. And they hop up and they go do it. Like I always use the example of putting on your shoes. If you say, hey, we're going to go to the store, can you put your shoes on? They're like, cool. And they pop up and they go and they get their shoes and they sit down and they pop them on their feet and they're like, let's go.
Game on.
They're just agreeable. And even when they aren't totally agreeable, like if they don't want to go to the store, they're like, yeah, okay. And they get up and they go do it, right? They're calm, they're alert, they're engaged. Then there's that red brain, and that's emotional and irrational. Like if your child is emotional and irrational, and this is when, again, using the shoes, you say, hey, can you go put your shoes on? And like, I can't do it. And they fling themselves on the ground. I don't know where they are. No, I don't want those shoes. I want the pink shoes. Don't
you do it for me.
Yeah, exactly. They get helpless. They freak out about it. My personal favorite was when, my youngest, he's got very particular tastes in shoes, which is probably why I use it as an example so much. But he was freaking out about wanting green shoes. My husband was like, he doesn't own green shoes. Like the green shoes don't exist. And I was like, okay, what green shoes are you talking about? And he's like, the one with the orange laces. And I'm like, those are your cousin's shoes.
Oh,
your cousin is 3 months old. They're not like, he wasn't like, oh, I like those shoes and I'm going to take them. He was, for some reason in that moment, he wanted the 3-month-old's
fixated
like, Robbie's shoes. And I was like, okay, they don't exist. So, right, that emotional, irrational, you're like, you do this every damn day. Yeah. This is not something that's difficult for you. It's not something you don't know how to do. You do this every day. Why is it so hard right now? It's because they're in their red brain. They're emotional, they're irrational. Their brain can't see a way that this demand that you've put on them is going to lead to safety. And so it's like, nope, not doing it. Mm-hmm. We do not have the energy for that crap. So it won't allow them to. And then there's the brown brain, which is when you push and you push and you push and they just like, they melt down. You're like, okay, here's the green shoes. You know, you magic them out of the air somehow and you give them exactly what they're asking for. And they're like, no. And they take it, they chuck it. They're, you know, the lights are on, but nobody's home. They can't engage with you in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. I can like picture my kids' faces in each of those
exactly
like, scenarios. I mean, in various you know, times, requests, scenarios, like you can literally picture your kids' faces.
Exactly. So when they're in brown brain, there's really nothing we can do to help them out of that other than make them feel safe. Mm. You know, make sure there aren't any demands on them. Wait it out. Give them physical safety so that nobody's like getting in their space or taking control of their body is a big one for little kids, where adults will like start like using hand over hand, or they'll pick them up and move them somewhere and it just escalates the situation. Making sure that they just physically and emotionally feel safe. And then you just kind of have to wait it out and let it pass, because any kind of interaction is going to be perceived as an attack and it's going to escalate it.
And I can imagine there's some individual differences there with kids about what makes them feel safe.
Oh, totally. Because
I can see that in my two, they're both daughters, but I can see that in them where they want different things or different things calm them down more or like make them feel more secure.
Exactly. Like my oldest, he wants to be cuddled and loved on and swung and hugged and all of that. My youngest wants nobody to touch him, look at him, and acknowledge his existence when he's in Brown Brain, which can be very difficult when he's like melting down in a park. There's lots of people around and they're very concerned. And I'm like, no, no, really, there's a perimeter. Please stay outside of it.
Yeah.
He wants nothing to do with anybody and he doesn't give a crap what you offer him. Don't touch me. Don't look at me. Don't interact with me in any way.
Yeah.
So every kid is going to be different. Yeah. And they're going to need different things. And it sucks when they're in Brown Brain because you're like, I want to help you. But they are not in a place where they can accept that help. Mm-hmm. And then we move into Red Brain. And so Red Brain, they're usually still talking, but it doesn't always make sense. Like it's more of a stream of consciousness than it is like a conversation. Mm. They're just kind of saying random stuff. Often they start talking about things that you don't understand whatsoever, or they'll start like, especially when they get into the like 4, 5, 6 age range, they'll start talking about like Pokemon or Spider-Man. And you're like, whoa, okay, we're talking about what now? They're like halfway through a conversation that you're just entering. So they will be talking, but they're not usually making a whole lot of sense. They're usually saying things that they don't understand often. They understand the emotion behind the word and the emotion that the words are usually said with, but they'll often say things like, I want to kill you. I hate you.
Yeah.
And you're like, how can you like, how do you even know what that means? And they don't know what it means, but they understand the tone of voice and the emotion those words are usually said with. And so they're using them as best as they can, given that they don't actually have access to their rational language-filled brain. They only have access to their emotional brain.
Yeah.
So yeah, rational and emotional, that's Red Brain. And when they're in Red Brain, that's when we can try and regulate them and empathize with them and speak to the emotions, not the words. So like, I hate you, go away. You really want me to leave you alone right now.
Yeah. And like
translating that for them.
Yes.
This is too hard. I can't do this. You're having a really hard time putting your shoes on.
Yeah.
You really wish that you could sit down and put your shoes on for me, but you don't know where they are, do you? And empathizing as much as possible with what they're trying to say, not with what they're saying.
Yeah, it's so interesting because if you put this again in adult terms, right? We talked about it before. What does it feel like when you desperately want to be able to execute something and you just don't have the skill and you feel terrible? When you're trying, like when you're having a hard time with something, if your best friend can come in and just mirror so perfectly back to you how you're feeling and what's happening, you feel so seen. Absolutely. And that is just immediately connection gets built from that. Immediately you do feel safer because you're like, yes, okay, finally, yes.
Somebody gets me.
Yeah.
And so it's that actually is a process called resonance. And so our limbic system gives off brain waves, just like light waves and sound waves. Our limbic system gives off brain waves, and the people around us, their limbic systems receive those brain waves. And that's why you can like walk into a room full of people and you instantly know who the shit disturber is and who's in charge and who's really uncomfortable and who's like, yeah, I got this, because you're receiving all of their resonance. And just like a Bluetooth hookup, Dr. Shankar always explains it like a Bluetooth hookup. The resonance that you're more familiar with, you'll hook up with faster.
Oh, it'll be easier for you.
So just like you get in your car and your phone automatically connects to the radio. But if you get in an Uber, it's not going to do that. It still can. The possibility is still there. It's just not as easy. And so our kids will very quickly sync up with our resonance because we're their mother, we're their parent. They have lots of practice with it. And they've had practice with it, especially with biological mothers, because they've been, our resonance is the first resonance they knew.
Yeah.
And then, and like, that's why your best friend comes in and she's able to pick up what you're putting down really quickly because y'all have a lot of experience syncing up with each other. Mm-hmm. And so this is why, like, when we're in red brain, our children are almost guaranteed to go into red brain.
Yeah.
If we're dysregulated, our children are going to be dysregulated because their brain is looking to us for, am I safe?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're dysregulated, it's not telepathy. They can't understand our thoughts. Right. They just have our feelings.
Yeah.
So if we're not feeling safe, if we're feeling drained, if we're feeling dysregulated, their brain is going to go, mom's dysregulated. That means I'm not safe. Where's the danger?
That's so interesting.
So there's a big component here of making sure that we put our own oxygen mask on first and we calm ourselves down first.
That is exactly it, because here's what I hear most often, and you probably hear a similar situation from your clients where, two, this is where my mind, this is what plays out in my mind more often. A particularly difficult situation is happening. My youngest is like, wants to listen to, I'm literally telling you what happened the other day. My youngest wants to listen to a particular song on the radio. We're not, for one reason or another, not listening to that song right now. And she proceeds to scream for literally 20 minutes on the way home. And 20 minutes doesn't sound like a long time until someone has screamed at you for literally 20 minutes. It's a really long time. And your mind interprets someone screaming at you for 20 minutes as like a kind of stressful thing. And so you end up stressed out and you can feel yourself not reacting in the way that you want to. So what typically happens is I think back and I think, God, I didn't handle that well. You should be better at this. You should be stronger at this. You need to do better than that. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think for a minute you should have taken better care of yourself. You should have allowed yourself to calm down before doing anything else.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this is where understanding what's going on under the hood makes such a difference, because if we're dysregulated, and like, I will cop to it, I'm a hitter. If somebody makes me feel unsafe, my instinct is to smack it.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that would usually result in a felony. So I have a punching bag in the basement. And if I'm feeling attacked, if my children's behavior is making me feel dysregulated, I will say, okay, mommy needs 10 minutes. I'm going to go punch my punching bag. And I go downstairs and I kick the shit out of my punching bag.
Wow.
Because if I don't take care of my needs, then I can't take care of theirs. And if I'm not feeling calm, and this is like, as mothers, we're always like, the kids come first. If they could just calm down, then I'll go calm myself down. And it's just completely backwards from what actually works, right? We have to calm down first. And if we can't, then we need to actually like hit that pause button and be like, I am actually going to go and calm down.
And to your point about resonance, actually calm down, not
exactly
fake calm down.
Exactly. That's why like, ooh, they're like, oh, my voice was even, I was, you know, I looked calm. You can't fake resonance. It is telling what is actually going on. So if you're like fake, like Stepford Wife calm, your kid knows that. They know that you're not actually calm and that you're like one step away from losing your mind. And again, it's not telepathy. They don't understand that they're the danger you're reacting to. They just know that you don't feel safe and therefore I'm not safe.
That is so good.
So making sure that one, we figure out what calms us down and not fighting it. Like, as I said, I'm a hitter and I could very easily be like, well, hitting is unacceptable. And therefore I'm going to try everything else under the sun to calm myself down. Fortunately, that would probably not work because my instinct is still going to be to smack the thing that is attacking me.
And from a cognitive psychologist here, the more you're pushing effort on avoiding something that your brain is telling you to do, you're spending effort. That runs out at some point. And that's exactly. when it gets scary, is when that runs that's out. Yeah.
That's so good. So not being so judgy to ourselves and being like, okay, I'm a hitter, but I'm not supposed to hit my kids. And that means I can't hit anything. Well, no, I can go hit punching bags. That's what they're made for. Yeah. And it's perfectly acceptable to do so to avoid hitting the thing that is making me upset. Mm-hmm. So looking at what calms you down, like actually calms you down, and figuring out a way to make that available to yourself in a way that's acceptable and safe for everyone. And then doing the same thing for your kids. And like my youngest, he loves to run. He is a bolter. Since he has learned how to walk, he has been going a mile a minute. And as a little one, that was kind of scary, because he would literally, the second he started running out of energy, he was gone.
Yeah.
But we were able to start, like, I was like, okay, he runs. Running is calming for him. That is why he does it. So how can we teach him how to run in a safe way? How can I, you know, and I did it. I had him on a leash for a while. that was how I could keep him safe.
We all say we're not going to do it. And then
he could run. And that way he was able to take off when he needed to. And I could then just keep up with him mm-hmm. instead of losing him and being scared that he was going to like run into traffic. You know, we started with him running around our backyard. We're very fortunate that we have a half acre lot. And so he was able to learn running around our fence was his first lap. Then we started with him running around the house. Now he goes for 5Ks with his dad every morning and every evening. And so he's got a GPS. He's got his little high visibility vest. And he's learning right now what his route is with his dad, so that when he gets a little bit older, we'll be able to say, yeah, sure, go for a run. And you don't need any accompaniment.
Yeah.
So finding those things, you know, if you have a thrower, and you've got a kid whose first instinct when he freaks out is to start chucking toys. Okay, well, maybe he can't chuck all the toys. What can he throw? Where can he throw it? Can we find a space in the house, usually an unfinished basement, where it's safe for them to throw something at the wall? What could they throw? Bean bags, those soft ball pit balls. Like, what can we give this kid to fulfill his sensoring? It's
yeah.
So that's when I try and get kids into a break. I try and pull them into like, okay, you don't look like you're feeling very well right now. Let's go take a break and calm down. And it doesn't have to be long, you know, 5-10 minutes max. And then we're going to come back to the thing that we needed to do.
Yeah. That's
so they're not getting away with anything, because that seems to be like the biggest thing. People are like, well, I can't just let them get away with it. You're not letting them get away with it. You're hitting the pause button. You're taking care of their needs, and then you're coming back to it.
Mm-hmm.
They still have to put their shoes on. They still have to go to school. They still have to do all the things that you needed them to do. Only now they're actually going to do it because they're calm enough to follow through.
Mm-hmm. I love that. What are your tips for older kids? Like as they get older, and because I go there because, you know, with a younger kid, they're call them like errors or mistakes or whatever. Like these yeah. things that we've been talking about, they're frequent. They happen day to day, but my kid throwing a tantrum in Target.
Yeah.
They're not going to kill someone else because they got in their car and they made a, you know, bad decision. Or, you know, like the older we get, the more the ripple effect of our behavior is wider and it's just more volatile. So mm-hmm. do you have thoughts for older kids, like a guest or audience members who are parenting teenagers or preteens in that age?
It's the same basic concept, right? We need to find out what calms them down and how to make that available to them proactively if possible. I mean, when they're already dysregulated, absolutely. But the more we give ourselves opportunities to calm down throughout the day, the less likely we are to get to that point where we're at the end of our rope and we snap mm-hmm. and we tip over into red brain, right? Red brain and blue brain aren't like you're in one or the other. Think of it like a seesaw, and you ideally are balanced. But then when you start going red brain heavy, that's when the emotional and irrational stuff starts coming out. So the more we can offer them what it is that they find calming. And the great thing about older kids is they can tell you.
Yeah.
It's not like when we're with like little kids, and with little kids, we have to observe them and we have to do a whole lot of trial and error and keep a lot of data to figure out, you know, like, do you find coloring calming more so than you find playing with Legos calming? Most teenagers know what they find calming.
Yeah.
They don't always feel safe to tell you, because again, they're putting some judgment on themselves about what that actually looks like. But I've worked with a lot of teens where I'm like, so what do you want to do when you feel mad?
And they immediately
clam up. And I'm like, no, it's okay. You can tell me what you want to do. I'm not asking what you know is acceptable to do. What do you instinctively want to do when you're mad? And usually it takes some digging and some, like,
yeah,
because they need to feel safe sharing that with you. But most of them will be like, I want to throw things. I want to hit someone. I want to scream and cry. I want to, you know, run away. They know what it is.
Yeah.
They just don't necessarily feel safe telling you what it is.
Yeah.
So coming from that place of either, what do you feel like you want to do when you're upset? Because obviously our body and our brain wants to do those things because it's calming to our nervous system. Or what do you enjoy doing the most? What puts you into that state of flow where you're like, I could do this forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you start doing it and then you suddenly look up and it's like 10 p.m.
You're like, that's a good tip.
Where did the day go? Right? Because that state of flow is a state of regulation. So, and then how can we schedule that into your day more frequently? So like using my oldest, who is also a runner, when he was in junior kindergarten, and I know we're talking about older kids, but I swear this connects. Alexa, be quiet. Sorry. I've got reminders because I have to remember to remember my children are on their way home.
We'll just take that out.
So like, I know we're talking about older kids, but this connects. When he was in junior kindergarten, his teacher came to me and she's like, he won't do math for love nor money. And I was like, well, that's odd because he's actually quite good at math. Unlike me, who's dyscalculic, like he's actually quite good at that. And she was like, well, he won't do it. And I was like, okay, well, let's talk about like, what time of day are you introducing it at? What kind of activity is like, we went through all the kind of boilerplate stuff. And I was like, does he say anything when he refuses? And that's when she was like, he keeps asking to go for a run. And I was like, because I've been working with him since he was 2 years old to recognize when he's dysregulated and he needs a break. And his preferred break is to go for a run. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, well, can he go for a short run? And she was like, not really. And I was like, can I sign something so that you can let him go for a run? And so they sent home a waiver, signed the waiver, sent it back. And I was like, just try it. If it doesn't work, then we don't have to do it again, but just try it. So the next day he went in, refused to do his math work. She was like, okay, why don't you go for a 5-minute run and then come back 3 laps around the school and back. And he was like, okay. He went, he did his 3 laps around the school, came back in, did his math work. What's next?
Wow.
And she was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
He knows when he's dysregulated. He knows he can't meet your expectation. And so he's not even going to try, but he also knows how to get himself back to calm, which most kids don't know how to do because it's not something we teach them.
Yeah.
And so with older kids, it's that like making sure that they get that proactively. If your child calms down from running, when can you schedule a run into their day? If your child calms down when they're drawing, how can we make that more available to them throughout their day? How can we give them space for those regulation breaks so that they're not running on fumes doing everything?
Yeah. That's so good. This has been so helpful. There are like pieces of this that I'm noting that I can see them playing out in my day-to-day life. This is so helpful. Where can people learn more about you and about your work?
My website is alannarobinson.com. Alanna spelt with 2 L's, 1 N. I also have a Facebook group, The Parenting Posse, which is about 10,000 parents strong, and amazing. It's aimed at parents of 2 to 6 year olds. So we're in there. It's a peer support group. We have a lot of my current and former clients in there. We have amazing moderation. So it's a great place to come and brainstorm different ways to reduce stressors and build skills. And then Instagram, I'm at Parenting Posse.
I love it. And you have a free resource. for this audience too.
I do. On my website, there is a big orange button for a free class. And in there, I kind of go through everything we've talked about today a little bit more in depth and how that actually applies to changing the behavior that we don't want to see. So you want to check that out.
Amazing. Alana, this has been so helpful from one parent to another. So helpful to understand, to be able to have that bit of empathy, both for my kid and for myself. Honestly, we get hard on our kids when they're not doing what we want, but we also really get critical of ourselves and how we're handling the situation. So this has just been almost a masterclass in compassion all around with a lot of actionable things that we can be doing to improve the way that we are showing up in that relationship. So I am so appreciative to you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, friends, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. I have a few things that I want to leave you with. So stick around for just a moment and I'll be back with a few extra supplemental resources for you if you want to go a bit deeper.
All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Alana Robinson. She is such an incredible expert and has such a great way of explaining how we can be better parents based on the neuroscience and the brain development that our kids are going through. What an incredible topic. If you're interested in this and you want to branch out a little bit more, I have a few things for you that I want you to know about. The first one is episode 321. This is an interview that I did with a man by the name of Doug Knoll. The title of this episode is The Critical Role of Emotions in Managing Conflict. Now, this episode is an interesting one because we were talking about conflict management between basically like adult people, but we got into a really deep conversation about parenting and about kids in that episode, specifically around how we validate kids' emotions. And the reason why I thought about this episode is Alana basically did that as an example in her episode, the episode you just listened to. So she talked about how, you know, when her kid is throwing a tantrum, she'll say, "You're really mad right now," or "You really don't want to put your shoes on right now." Doug did the exact same thing. He suggests the exact same thing with adults. So it's interesting if you listen to these two episodes and look for the parallels. It's basically like human beings like to be validated and they like to be seen for the experience they're having. How crazy, huh? But anyway, if you are interested in that, definitely take a peek at Doug Knoll's episode, episode 321. It's linked below. You're really going to get a lot out of that, especially given what we talked about today with Alana. The second resource I want you to know about is another podcast episode, episode 324, and this is with Dr. Michelle Deering. Dr. Michelle is... She basically helps us figure out how to cultivate a better relationship with our daughters. She really focuses on the mother-daughter relationship, but man, there's a lot in there about parenting in general. So if you're finding yourself in a stage of life where you're really focusing on parenting or you're needing some resources, that's another episode that you can go to in order to get some good information. Dr. Deering is a psychologist herself. She is incredible. And she just has this amazing way of, I don't know, she just feels like a hug when you talk to her. She's just lovely. So if you're in that situation where you need, you know, some compassionate but still hard-hitting information, Dr. Deering's episode is amazing. That is episode 324. And the last resource is the free class that Alana is offering to this audience. The class is called How to Raise Well-Behaved Kids Without Yelling, Shaming, or Timeouts. I'm so curious about this. I have it linked below, but you go to alanarobinson.com/free class and you can sign up to get, I think it's immediate access to this class to really deepen some of the information that we talked about today on this episode. So I always encourage people to take guests up on their offer when they have these free resources, because you never know when you're going to walk away with just that nugget of information that really makes the world of difference for you as you're thinking about, you know, how to handle, in this case, a difficult situation with your kids. You guys, I'm so grateful for you for being along on this journey with me for so many years. If you are tuning in for the first time, welcome. I'm so thrilled you're here. And this is just the highlight of my week to be able to put these episodes out there and know that some of you might be benefiting from what we're doing. So thank you so much for being here. Truly, it means the world for you to tune in each week and take a little bit of time to focus on yourself and to improve your life experience, because that's really what it's all about. And that's why we're here. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.